This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor with Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations, commenting on six capitals, six points of view. We go to Brussels, the twin headquarters of NATO and the European Union. But NATO is everything this week because of news I'm reading from The Guardian. Finland becomes 31st member of NATO in Brussels ceremony. Formal accession nearly doubles NATO border with Russia as Moscow warns Finland it will boost its defenses if necessary. Professor, we know that Finland has an opinion of Russia, and it's not positive, dating from the 1939 to 1940 war. Although I'm told Russia has an opinion of Finland that's not positive, dating from the 1941 to 1945 war. Nonetheless, these are states that have tolerated each other for the 20th century, and now it looks that the tolerance has ended. Is that a positive? Your point of view in Brussels?
Well, I think that none of this would have happened if Putin had not had the idea of a quick trip to Ukraine to capture it. And to remember, Putin has to be elected. And in the last election, the Communist Party won 50% more votes than they had previously. And although Putin succeeded somehow in winning the election, he was a bit disturbed by how badly he did compared to how he expected to do. And Finland, the fact that Finland has abandoned her long standing policy of neutrality, heavily armed but neutrality, is very striking. I mean, this is not a decision they have made lightly. And of course, if we add Sweden to that, Sweden is a very formidable military and technological power, and her position is absolutely critical for Russian security. And the fact that they, too, have changed their minds is very, very significant. So I think NATO has been greatly strengthened. But the problem for the sort of the soft NATO, the ones who are to the west of Poland, essentially, starting with Germany, is that Sweden and Finland and the so-called Bucharest 9 and all the rest, they have a very hard-line view of Russia. And the Estonian president was just quoted about how it's absolutely essential that Russia be defeated, because if Russia's not defeated, then we're really in trouble. And I think that it's possible that NATO's not going to survive, and what we're going to get is a really tough, hard to crack alliance in Central Europe, and a consequent shift in political say. This new alliance, if it in fact turns out to be that, is likely to be very, very sophisticated, and they're also likely, I think, to be nuclear. But if I'm looking at Brussels, I think the most astonishing thing that has happened since we last spoke was Seymour Hersh's allegation that with more detail that we blew up both the Nord Stream 1 and the Nord Stream 2 pipelines. And as I think I said, this was Germany is our ally. This was an act of war carried out by the President of the United States. He was the one who gave the order. And remember that earlier he had been asked about the Nord Stream pipeline, and he said, it'll go away, so we can make it go away. Well, this was a disastrous way to treat an ally, and it made no sense strategically. And finally, it's completely illegal. It's completely unconstitutional in the United States, and I hope that it's not going to help our credibility with our allies. And I hope that people in America jump on this and say we cannot have a situation where the president does not have to consult with Congress. I'm returning very much to the Korean War example and the very important case of Youngstown Steel versus the United States of America when Truman exceeded his powers in the Korean War by nationalizing steel. And that, if you read the all of the opinions, the three opinions in that case, they lay out what we have to decide. And but if I were an American ally, I would be shocked by this. Even more shocked than learning that that guy with an American accent who follows me around all the time is, in fact, working for the Americans.
Macron in Beijing, toasting Xi Jinping, walking next to Xi Jinping in a casual park setting, while back in Paris, the graffiti on top of the Arc de Triomphe was 64, it's a no. There was one city hall in Bordeaux attacked. There was another restaurant associated with Macron, at least momentarily attacked. There was fire set in front. It was doused by the fire forces. The trains are erratic. Transportation is difficult because the refineries have been blocked off at some point. Petrol is short. All about the revision of the retirement age in Paris, but at the same time, it looks very much like a challenge to Macron's authority here in his second term. And he's toasting Xi Jinping, an ally of Moscow. Is this in any fashion influential inside NATO or the EU?
Well, I think the answer is no. I listen to lots of foreign language commentary, and I think that most of them, most foreign commentators consider that Macron is not really a person to be taken seriously, although he is. Remember, the French haven't really won a war, maybe since the War of American Independence. And they have a hang-up about this. And de Gaulle, of course, was very, very... he had this idea that somehow he could restore France to its status as a great power, which it had lost, really, with the death of Louis XIV at the beginning of the 19th century. And... or the beginning... Yeah, okay. And or the beginning of the 18th century, I'm sorry. Macron is actually doing the right thing domestically in that they have to fund their retirement accounts. They have to do it. And he said that since he can't be reelected, he'll take the hit for doing this. But he is viewed with complete contempt by a lot of the French because of his utter lack of empathy. And he fears that what's going to happen is that after he's done all this, then the dread Marine Le Pen is going to come in. But what about Xi? We have to understand that Xi is a man who is interested only in himself. Everything that he does has to do with making him the single man who runs China. And that has not been seen really since the late Qing dynasty. And he is very interested because China is isolated diplomatically. He's interested in foreigners coming to sort of pledge fealty. And Macron has turned up, and she has been just absolutely buttering him up like none of your business, and vice versa. When Macron visited Canton, she did something very unusual, which is he went with him at the time, and they have cooked up some economic exchanges. But the idea that Macron is somehow going to split the Western alliance and end China's economic and diplomatic isolation is crazy. And I suggest we remember that the European Commission president, Ursula von their Leyen, is also in Beijing and also talking to Xi. Xi has arranged it so that there's a steady stream of sort of tributary states coming in. But Xi has not buttered him up. She was very hard on him in her remarks, and he has not buttered her up. But I suspect that in her own way, she's more important and she's taken more seriously than Macron is. So what we're seeing is a kind of a flurry of activity that is, in effect, contentless and irrelevant. I mean, the French contribution to the to Ukraine war has been very, very limited, and they have this terrible inferiority complex, which leads them to look at everything and see if it's an opportunity to bring back Louis XIV, and it's not. They have not adjusted very well, although it's a fine country, but France has not adjusted very well, particularly to the world since the defeat of Napoleon.
Let's head to D.C. then. Here's another country that concentrates on domestic policy and is less than focused on foreign policy. Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations, 6 capitals, 6 points of view, Washington ahead, then Beijing, and then a fresh advantage for Taipei, Taiwan in these last days. Friends of History Debating Society, I'm John Batchelor.